Katie Horner is a history teacher at Belleville East High School in Belleville, Illinois, who came to Hawaii to deliver a eulogy at the National Memorial Cemetery of the Pacific for sailor Bruce Dean Bradley, who was serving aboard the USS Arizona during the Pearl Harbor attack. Her work is part of a nationwide history project called Understanding Sacrifice, and we talked with her about her effort to revive the memory of a fallen hero.
Bruce Dean Bradley was born in Paw Paw, Illinois, which is a rural town, in northern Illinois. And his mother was sick and had to leave the family for a while. So his father sent him to Elgin, Illinois, to live with his sister and brother-in-law, and she essentially raised him. He made it through 2.5 years of high school at Elgin High School and then decided to join the United States Navy. In October of 1940, he joined as an apprentice seaman and trained at the Great Lakes Naval Training Station there, and then was later transferred out to San Diego, where he eventually ended up on the USS Arizona on December 9th, 1940, almost a year to the day from when it was attacked. He was elevated to a seaman second class, and there he served until December 7th, 1941, when the Arizona was sunk. His body was never recovered. It took about a month for the family to finally receive official word that they were considering him deceased. His sister, Laura, the one who essentially raised him, wrote repeated letters to the Navy asking for any indication that he might be alive. Did they find any personal belongings? And actually, 3 years after he died and they declared him dead, she was still writing letters asking even for a flag, any kind of memorial of him. He was 19 when he died, so he didn't have a chance to get married or have children. He was a son and a brother, and he had 4 siblings that missed him terribly. They're all now deceased as well. So through the course of my research, I was fortunate enough to find some descendants of his, some great nieces and nephews. Much of the letters and even the Purple Heart that he was awarded were lost over time. So one of his great nieces actually petitioned the Navy to have a new Purple Heart issued, and it was denied initially because they only reissued those to immediate family members, but all of his siblings are deceased, and he doesn't have children. So she took it up the chain and went to President Obama and wrote repeated letters to President Obama, who eventually said, I think you should be able to get one of these, and told that to the Navy, and they did, in fact, reissue him, his family, a Purple Heart that she then gave to his namesake.
There are a lot of stories within the story here, aren't there? And one of them is just the sheer chaos at Pearl Harbor after the attack.
Right. The countless men and women that just were lost for a time, you know, families hearing of the attack and desperate for information, and, you know, in an era where they didn't have the quick communications that we do today, that was cumbersome, and it took some time to even just get any closure as to what was going on with your loved one. And the Bradleys were on the losing side of that, never got their brother back, never, you know, had that closure of a body. And but they did put a memorial to him in his hometown where he was born. There's a headstone there, and then there's also a veterans memorial honoring him. So they've continued to try to remember him and losing him at such a young age.
One of the other stories being a very determined family.
Yes, there's actually now a bill that is going to be introduced in Congress to try to streamline the replacement of lost medals for families. The different branches of the military handle this in different ways. And so this Congressman Kind is his name, is trying to make this a little bit more uniform and easier so that families can get those Purple Hearts or whatever medal that sometimes gets misplaced over time through generations, but was still significant to the family, and they should be able to have a piece of that. So that's kind of a legacy to him that he's helping out other families still today.
Well, you know, as a historical researcher, the way one story can be representative of so many thousands of others, and this is clearly that kind of story, isn't it?
It is. Bruce, when I was doing my research on Bruce, what I kept, you know, I would run into a dead end sometimes and not find that letter that I was seeking out. And rather than being frustrated, it made me realize that there are so many men. I was so glad I was seeking out his story, because there's so many men and women whose story is not being sought out.
Mm-hmm.
So he represents so many of those young men that, you know, missed out on that next step in life to have children and have spouses. And so I'm glad that I was able to give a little life to this story. It's been a great program that we've been involved in. We've visited already in San Francisco. We visited two different cemeteries that the National Cemetery Administration runs, and they've got the Walls of the Missing, and they've got these. We've gone to the gravesite of other fallen heroes and given eulogies, and it's just been such a wonderful way to remember them. I'm grateful to them and to the American Battle Monuments Commission. They've done a great job putting these programs together to remember our fallen soldiers.
Well, one of the other things that it reminds us of is that, you know, we often speak of the resilience of the Second World War generation, and it's pretty difficult from the point of view of today to imagine a situation as catastrophic as the Second World War, where there probably wasn't a family in America that was not somehow affected.
Absolutely. And whether you sent somebody, a loved one, overseas, or whether you had somebody at home working to build machines and uniforms, or, you know, any part of the home front industry, we were all in one way or another in that era really supporting that war effort. And I think that Pearl Harbor being attacked, you know, on our home soil really just unified this nation in a way that nothing in my lifetime has seen.
Do you think we still, as a society, have that kind of resilience within us?
I do. I mean, 9/11 was absolutely a unifying event for a time in our country. You know, I think we saw everybody pulling together and appalled that something horrible could happen on our home soil. I just don't think we had the, you know, it didn't turn into something like World War II. It didn't turn into the same kind of war. I just think warfare has changed so much that it might not be a war that unifies us in that way. It could be something different. But I think that we saw glimpses of that with 9/11 and how protective we are of our country and of our citizens. And I do think that that is still there. And it's something that I try to illustrate to my students, that time and again in history, it's not just a war that can unify us. We've had different events in our life throughout the course of history that has unified the United States in many different ways. And deep down, Americans are very proud of who they are. And when it's threatened, I think we pull together. And I truly believe that that still exists.
Katie Horner teaches history at Belleville East High School in Belleville, Illinois. She's one of 18 middle and high school educators around the country taking part in Understanding Sacrifice, an 18-month program to share knowledge about America's role in the Pacific Theater of Operations during the Second World War, and to create eulogies for men and women lost in that conflict.